The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show, this week on the Double Penetration episode. One of my favorite bands from back in the day, it is Kix. Both Steve Whiteman and Mark Shanker are on the show, and man, is it just fun talking to them. If you've never seen the band Kix live, you are missing out. If you're a big Kix fan, you could have heard the show 5 days earlier. If you use the code SDR30 at GasDigitalNetwork.com, you get a 30-day free trial for the month of December. Whenever you start it, you would get 30 days free, and you get about 20% off the entire network and access to the other 20 shows, like the newest show that we have on the network now with Jessica Kirsten called Disgusting Hawk, and 19 other shows or something like that. Something like 4,000 hours of commercial-free HD video and audio that you can listen or watch whenever you want. Really great stuff over at Gas Digital Network. And I'm not just saying that because I'm the owner, but really any way you want to listen to us, whether it's free on our YouTube page or anywhere you use a podcast aggregator, is fine by me. We just want you to listen and spread the love of the show. Here it is right now, the Kix episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again from Pennsylvania, it is James Mattern, who learned a lesson from Rob Schneider when we had him on last time. Make your fucking bed, and he makes his bed. Thank God. Nothing more classless than sitting on an unmade bed. So, James, thank you for learning life lessons from me.
At 42, but I figured I would do it. Rob Schneider's cool and all, but come on, man. This is metal I grew up listening to. Yeah, I pay respect right here, dog.
Fair enough. You put on your best outfits for Mark and Steve. We got them here from Kix. Really thrilled to have you guys on. So much going on in the Kix world, which is funny to say in 2020. Who would know? Because, Steve, we just talked about it on the air, off air. You and I go back 20 years or so.
At least
back when Funny Money first came out. And at the time, there was not even an inkling of an idea that Kix would get back together, let alone record another record, let alone do a documentary, let alone do reissues. And now it's like the Kix train is full blown these days.
Yeah, I thought it was dead and gone. And then I recruited this guy named Mark Shanker to join me in Funny Money. And he just, you know, he kind of knows how to come in and take the reins without acting like he's taking the reins. And his ideas and his projects and everything that he touches just seems to turn to gold. So a lot of what's happened with Kix is due to Mark. So, yeah, you know, I give him all the credit.
Now, Mark, I saw something somewhere where you kind of said how you pushed them into, hey, why don't we try this? Why don't we try and bring the Kix world back?
Well, you know, I kind of felt like a butler on the sidelines waiting to take orders, you know, and, I tried to talk Steve and Brian and Jimmy and Ronnie. It's like, hey, why don't we just, you know, dip our toe in the pool a little bit? Meanwhile, I'm just planning a full dive, you know, so I mean, that's what I think in the back of my head. But as I remember it, it was, you know, I just felt like I shouldn't push the guys, but I thought it was a great idea. So I kept bringing it up, and that kind of just kept them thinking about it, which was important. So, mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. So, I mean, people that don't know a quick little Kix history, I think the first record was 80 or 81, a long time ago, 81. Right? 81. And then a couple of albums, which doesn't happen anymore, where you're allowed as a band to kind of find your rhythm. You know, that first album was great. Yeah, 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 was on that record and the itch and stuff. And then the second album, which I know you guys as a band didn't love as much anyway, then Midnight Dynamite comes out, right? And Midnight Dynamite blows you guys up in a level where now you can tour, but still local. Like local, and I mean New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, where you guys are from. And then Blow My Fuse comes out and you guys blew up, right? Yeah,
I don't know that Midnight Dynamite blew us up. I think we kind of blew ourselves up just by relentless touring and taking our hard-earned club money and moving west, going to Cleveland, going to Chicago, going to Milwaukee, going to Texas. And the record company really did very little for that record. After they put out Cold Shower as a video, and as far as they were concerned, it was dead. And we knew we had a great record, and we refused to let it die. So I think we set ourselves up for the Blow My Fuse success.
That's cool. I mean, also, what I think is interesting, because now it is, 35 years from Midnight Dynamite, mm-hmm. which is crazy, by the way. The album is too old for me to date. I find that hilarious. You know, that long. It really is crazy, you know. But it is probably, and I, you know, it's hard to say. I think if you're a casual Kix fan, it's probably Blow My Fuse is their favorite record.
Sure.
But if you're a real nitty-gritty Kix fan, it's Midnight Dynamite. Is that a fair assessment?
Very fair. Yeah.
So yeah, Midnight Dynamite's my favorite by far, too. That was always just the production, the Bo Hill stamp on that record was, and that album just sounded so good. I mean, I just love, and the songs were relentlessly good. Like, there's not a bad one on the table there.
Right, for sure. And I want to get into the reissue and stuff, but I just want to quickly hit a couple of little Kix stories from my own personal life, right? So I'm a big fan forever, as you know. And I'm going to say it was probably, what year did Blow My Fuse come out? Is that like
89?
88, 89. I drove from New York City to fucking Hammerjacks to see you guys. Who would do that now? You know what I mean? That's crazy to think. I left my house at like 5:30 in the afternoon to get there by like 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever it was, to see you guys perform live. I don't think I would ever do that for another band in my life.
We still get that. We get people traveling from New York and New Jersey and from North Carolina just to come see our show, our local show. So I don't know. I don't get it, but God bless them.
So, and on that thing about your live show, right, for the people that, it's the thing that you hear all the time, you have to go see Kix live, right? The amazing part of it is, I'm guessing, I don't want to guess ages, but I'm guessing you're in your 60s somewhere, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I hosted...
Not me.
not Mark. No, he's the baby.
By the way, Steve, on a side note, I always say the one job, really there's two, but the main job for a lead singer, stay thin. That's all people care about. And then if you sound...
Keep your hair.
You can wear a wig, but if
I'm 42 and look at you guys. Oh my God. But I knew I wanted to be in a rock band in the 80s, and now I know why. I would have cut my goddamn hair.
But if you sound good, that's just icing on the cake. But you just want the singer to not look like shit.
Right.
And you both look great, but you have crazy fucking energy these days and sound as good as ever. I know that you were a vocal teacher for a long time. Are you still doing that on the side or not anymore?
Since COVID, I've stopped. I just didn't want to get in these little tiny teaching rooms anymore with, you know, the possibility of catching anything. So, and after I've been doing it for 25 years, and I thought, you know what, not doing it feels better than doing it now. So I just hung it up.
But I'm guessing that because you go down that path, that is the reason why your voice still sounds so good. But the bigger question is, at this age, where the fuck do you still get all the energy? I don't understand it, because I don't want to do anything and I'm 50.
I think you just got to keep yourself in good shape. You know, I've always worked out. I've always done cardio. I've always lifted weights. I just believe in the present, the show, the presentation of the show is the most important thing to me. So I go out of my way to keep myself in really good shape so I can entertain like I did in my 20s.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I hosted this thing for years, not the last couple of years, called the M3 Rock Festival, right? Mm-hmm. That you guys, you're so big in that area that they decided, okay, the festival day, when we first did it, it was the first year or the second year, I forget, it was a Saturday, and they said, all right, we're going to add a second day on Friday. Let's just sell it out easy. Let's just put Kix on to open to do Friday. And they knew Friday would sell out, and it's just an amazing thing after all these years that, oh, a Kix show is happening. We could put 20,000 people in an arena in Baltimore. It's crazy.
Yeah, if only we had 100 more cities like that, we'd be AC/DC.
Yeah. It is, because for whatever reason, you're the hometown heroes of that area, and you'll sell out arenas there till you can't play anymore. For whatever reason, the way that most people will describe you guys, that I'm sure you're sick of hearing, Oh my God, they're the most underrated band in rock and roll. I'm sure you've heard that a million times, right?
Yeah, million and one now.
Right. And it's just a weird thing that I don't know why those arenas aren't filled all over the country or all over the world when it's just Kicks. You do a lot of festivals and stuff, but anybody that sees a live Kick show goes, oh, I get it.
You know, you can't waste your time thinking about that. You just have to accept what it is, what it is, and, you know, accept it for what it is and do your best at what you're doing. So I've never been one to look back. I always look ahead. So, you know, I don't look back with any regrets because I've made a living playing music my entire life. Mm-hmm. I play with great people. I'm fortunate to play with really, really good people that I love to be around. And I have no regrets at all. So I hear that all the time, but I don't care.
Well, speaking of that, I have a bunch of quick questions I want to get to. So there's a rumor that has been on the internet since I've known of you guys. Okay. And even though I've interviewed you a bunch of times over the years, I don't think I ever asked this to you directly, but I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on it. Okay. Yeah. It is a well-known fact that Kicks and Poison was opening for Kicks for a long time. Poison goes out to LA and there's all these rumors that their whole stage presence is very much Kicks emulated. And
that's
everyone,
not a rumor. That's a fact.
Okay. I just want to make sure of that, because for years you hear, well, that's a theory. I've always felt, well, go watch both bands. You'll realize it's not a theory. Had you ever had a chance to have that discussion with Brett, or it's just an understood thing with the whole idea?
Yeah, it's pretty much an understood thing. It was so obvious because, you know, they studied us when they were opening for us, and they were just a bunch of little guys with hard-ons running around, and they were doing everything they could to get noticed. And, you know, they had the balls to pack up the truck and go to Los Angeles, and they worked their asses off, but they definitely lifted a lot of our stage show. And I remember when we were recording, I think it was Blow My Fuse, one of their videos come on MTV, and they go, Steve, you're on television. And it was Brett.
What are you going to say, James?
Well, I was going to say this. You have more street cred, though, because if you went to school and said that you like Kicks, people are like, yeah. If you had, like, I made a mistake once of wearing a Poison hat, and I got beat the fuck up that whole year. Beat the fuck up. And a Bon Jovi hat. But I had to switch to just like you, GNR.
There you go.
My mistake was still acceptable, but fucking Poison? Get popped right in the mouth.
I think Poison would appeal more to teeny boppers than, you know, hardcore rockers.
Right. Yeah, you guys, though, were interesting, though, because of, like, the ballads, like, Don't Close Your Eyes. You kind of teetered into that universe more, but the albums weren't. It was just a couple, like at least one or two ballads per record that would make appeal to that.
Yeah. Audience. Unfortunately, that's the only thing radio would play. That's why the record company would always go after the ballad, because most radio stations at that time were playing only classic rock and roll with an occasional ballad from a hard rock band.
Right.
So exactly. We just had to give them what they would play.
Yeah, your second record was probably all dictated by the label, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, because it was a departure. Ooh, yeah. It almost sounded like new wave, I guess. I don't know. Some of it sounded keyboardy and
that's fair, because the producer just come off of the Romantics album. Remember the Romantics?
Of course, yeah.
I hear the secret that you keep. So they felt that they had to get a poppy producer to get us on the radio.
Right,
and
right.
The music that we took down there to record was so much better than what we wound up recording. They made us do outside material. And when we weren't in the studio, yeah, the producer was all over the keyboards and bringing in background singers and ruined a bunch of the tracks that we thought were pretty hard rocking when we left them.
Right. Well, that's crazy. And then somehow you got creative control back for the following records. I don't know how you were able to accomplish that, but kudos to you guys.
I think that was a lot of Bo Hill. I think he believed in the music that we demoed, and he believed in the band, and they gave him carte blanche on that record.
Oh, that's good to know. I didn't know that. Bo did so many records. It's crazy. He's such a super talented guy. So in 2014, go fast forward 100 years, the documentary that came out, I didn't see the whole thing. I watched bits and pieces of it. The Can't Stop the Show Kicks documentary kind of was a preamble to Rock Your Face Off, which came out later that year, if I'm not mistaken, right? So it was like the doc and then the new record, correct?
Other way around.
The other way around. All right, close.
2014
enough.
Was Rock Your Face Off, and the documentary came out in 2016.
Oh, really?
Which went to number one on Billboard, by the way.
The album went to number one.
No, the documentary did.
Oh, wow. Okay, I have my facts wrong, but that's fantastic. So the album was the first album in 19 years, which is crazy. And then the doc that comes out that kind of explains all about you guys and all these guys. So Nuno in it and a bunch of Lizzie Hale's in it. A lot of people that are, you know, your peers, but also the people that respect the hell out of you guys, talking about how much Kix was an influence on them. Were you guys involved with it, or was it done by an outside source?
No, the documentary was, it was when we were recording Rock Your Face Off, the director for the documentary, Steven Narangas, he had reached out to me and said, hey, I'd like to, you know, put some cameras in the studio and kind of spy on you guys while you're doing Rock Your Face Off. And we did most of it, pretty much, I think everything except the drums. We did here at my house in my studio. And I said, sure. Yeah. Put some cameras up and my vision for that was that, you know, we would just have a bunch of YouTube clips that we could put up on YouTube just to sort of, you know, help push the album along after it came out. And so Steven and I started looking at the raw footage and we thought, you know, I think there's maybe like a story here somehow. And so at that point, we were still collecting footage. And I thought we might want to change the idea of this project to not just throw up random YouTube clips and turn it into a, you know, a full length feature film, because there was enough of a story there to get to just stretch it out and put it together in a way that made sense in a linear fashion for the viewer. So so that's where that idea came from. It wasn't intended to be a documentary. And then of course there's a live disc that goes along with it. So it's really good.
Am I right, there, Mark, to assume that because it was 19 years before they recorded a new record, that you were the one that was quietly nudging them into doing that, or am I wrong?
Oh, I don't know about quietly. I think it just was the right time. And, cause I remember walking through Mohegan Sun up in Connecticut with Brian, and Ronnie was one of the ones that was excited about doing a new record. And we were talking to Brian about it, and he was, he was still in Rhino Bucket at the time. And he was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's a good time to do a Kix record. And so, Steve, I don't remember how you felt about it. I think you were like, sounded like a good idea. Let's try to do it. Is that true?
Well, what was the label we were with that we put the live in Baltimore CD out with, they wanted us to make another a studio album. They said we'll put this out, we'll distribute it, but we want a studio album in return. Mm-hmm. And that kind of got everybody churning. That got everybody thinking about it. That's how I remember it, that it pushed us in that direction.
Yeah, that was it was the idea. And then because I really wanted to get that live the live DVD out. So it was a live DVD called Live in Baltimore. And
was it at M3 or no?
We filmed it at Ram's Head in Baltimore.
Okay.
And so I don't want to mention the record label's name, but they they didn't fulfill their end of the contract on the DVD side. So
Shannon can look up the label name and we'll say it for you.
Well, they were supposed to get the sync rights, which they did not get, which made the album illegal. And so it took me about 5 months with our lawyer to break that contract with that record company. And then we signed with Loud and Proud Records, our old friend Tom Lipsky from way back in the day.
Wait, is Loud and Proud Records affiliated with Loud and Proud from L'Amour?
No, Loud and Proud was actually a sub-label of Roadrunner. So we were on that for a while, and it was distributed by WEA, Warner Electro Atlantic.
Okay.
So and Tom Lipsky ran that label, and so we got in pretty easily with Tom, because Tom had done show business with Kix way back when. And before that I was signed to Tom Lipsky's management company as a songwriter. And so Tom and I go way back, and Kix and Tom go way back. So it was like a perfect situation for us, because we trusted him and we know, you know, we know that he would take care of us, and he really did.
That's cool. You know, Steve, one of my favorite things that you're known for is your I guess we call them your rants or your speeches or your little, you know, in between segues of songs. I mean, yeah. Basically had one in it that you would just change every night. And I was watching one recently where you talked about when Blow My Fuse hit, and then, you know, it became, you sold your first million records, and then all of a sudden you got a new car, you got a boat, and you got a new girlfriend.
That's all bullshit.
You won the triple crown, brother. You won the triple crown right there.
Everything I say is bullshit on stage. There's nothing true.
Never?
Never.
Oh, that's good to know. It breaks my heart a little bit, you know. One time I saw you guys, and I was dating this girl. We went to see right when the Blow My Fuse record had hit. But I don't think Don't Close Your Eyes was a hit yet. Like, the album come out, I think the first single might have been Cold Blood. I forget exactly. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong. But and then you're singing Don't Close Your Eyes, and it was the first time I'm hearing it. And it's such a powerful song. I'm like, oh, my God. And I turn to see the girl that I was dating, if she's enjoying it, and she was bawling.
Oh, man.
It was crazy. I was like, oh, my God. Did someone try and kill themselves in your life? Like, what's going on? It was really wild. It just shows, you know, how strong you guys are as performers. It's just amazing to me. James, you have a question. I can tell when you lean forward.
I just get so fired up. First of all, I love that you lie. And we, like, just Ralph saying that story, I believed it. And I was heartbroken when you said no. It's like what George Burns said, the first rule of show business, sincerity. And once you fake that, you got it made. Can I just say this? I love Don't Close Your Eyes, obviously. But the first couple times I heard it, so I would go to bed like at 9 because I was raised by my grandparents, which means my mom fucked up. So I was sheltered. So they'd let me put the radio on for like 20 minutes while I'm laying down. And they always played you guys. And Don't Close Your Eyes when you're like a 10-year-old, when I'm supposed to go to sleep, to go to school, scared the shit out of me. All the songs amazing, but I was petrified. And I think I would skip it a few times because I was like, no, man, what's he saying? What will happen if I close my eyes? It freaked the shit out of me. But that's how good the song is. It made a 10-year-old never want to sleep. Never wanted to. I thought you were talking to me, man. I don't know.
That's great, though. I never thought about it that way. Poor little James Mattern has insomnia because of Kicks.
Yo, man, 92.3. They played it every night at 9 o'clock, 9:05, man. And every day, baby.
All right, before we go any further, I want to take a moment to talk about one of our newer sponsors. It is Omigo, O-M-I-G-O, the modern bidet experience. If you are like me and you used to just do the toilet paper, maybe the wipes, which I still use once in a while, bidets change everything. It gets way up in there, cleans you in a way that you have extra confidence. That's the best way I could say it. Jay talks about this a lot, how he goes extra deep when he cleans. You don't need to do that if you have a bidet. You just sit there, turn it on, feels great. You don't need to worry about finding toilet paper, and it gives you a cleaner, fresher feeling. It's just, it is a game changer. That's the best way I describe it. Anybody that uses a bidet once, it's like, why am I not always using this? Back in the day, you needed two separate things, the toilet and then the bidet. Well, that has changed thanks to Omigo. Go to myomigo.com. That's myomigo.com/SDR, and you get 15% off. Get your bidet today. Your butt will thank you, and your significant other will thank you for getting a cleaner butt. So once again, it's myomigo.com, myomigo.com/SDR. You get 15% off. Your butt will thank you. All right, let's get back into it.
All right, so now you reissued Blow My Fuse a couple of years ago, and it did so well that now you're doing that with Midnight Dynamite, calling it Relit. Give me a little background. I know there's some demos on here. There's some bonus stuff on here. Just like for the fans here, what's actually happening with this reissue?
Well, we had a lot of luck with Bo on doing Blow My Fuse. And Steve and Jimmy and I were, I think it was Houston. And Bo had driven up from his house in Austin to hang out with the band and see everybody and see the show, of course. And we were sitting in the hotel bar after the show, just the three of us. And, you know, Bo's one of those guys, he likes to table ideas in a certain way. So he's like, guys, I got just an idea. I just want to just float it out to you and see what you think. And he says, since this Fuse thing was so successful, I want you guys to let me do Midnight Dynamite. And then Steve like fell back in his chair. He's like, no way. You know, Jimmy was like, forget it. That album sounds so great. There's no way you can beat it. And Bo was like, he was deadpan. He was like, I can beat it. And again, we're just like, no way. And he's like, I'm telling you, I can beat it. And it was like, wow, okay, that's pretty strong coming from, you know, and Bo will even say so himself. You look at the impressive list of artists that he's worked with, that Midnight Dynamite is his favorite record of all the records that he's done. So he was really keen to get back into his own work after, you know, because he didn't do Fuse, so he was working on somebody else's engineering and recording. But Midnight Dynamite was all him, and so he was dying to get in there and sort of unlock Midnight Dynamite with a super hard hitting mix with everything real crisp and clear, and then 35 years of mixing experience that Bo Hill has tacked on top of what he had before.
But let me ask a stupid question about it. So he has the masters still somehow, and now
no.
He's like, I don't know how this works. Pretend I'm an idiot, which should be easy.
Okay. Right? Okay. Well, we had a relationship with Atlantic, and it's actually Rhino Records has rights to the masters at the moment. And so we had a relation with Rhino when we did Fuse. So we already had that doorway was already open for us. And so we just went back and, you know, lather, rinse, repeated the same process. We were like, hey, we need to get these masters. How much is it going to be? How much is the licensing going to be? And so we had the masters are actually in a vault in Burbank, California, and we had them digitized and sent on a hard drive to Bo.
Wow. So they weren't even digital. That's crazy. They're just sitting somewhere.
Still on tape. So they had to, you know, check the tapes and bake them and, you know, run them off into Pro Tools projects. And I think there were 12 reels, and it costs about $400 a reel to get them digitized.
Mm-hmm.
And then they send you all of the material that's in all the track sheets, everything that anybody wrote that's in the tape box. And so there was a bunch of Polaroids that we found in one of tape boxes as well. And those are included in the disc package. So it's kind of funny to see, you know, 25 year old Steve in there doing vocals. And
I haven't seen that yet. Did they have the picture of the photo with me with my headphones going up and pulling my hair all up? That was the whole concept for the album.
Yeah, that photo I couldn't find, but I found a picture of that from the back.
Can I ask a question? How does wearing your headphones away be a concept for an album?
Let me show you.
I don't understand what that means. Like, here, James, record this.
No, you do this.
Hold on, let me get the pic.
Okay. My hair was longer, so it was really up high, and it just looked ridiculous. And the guy took a picture of it, and they go, that's an album cover.
Oh, I see. That's the okay. It makes more sense. I thought you meant it was the concept for the actual album, but you meant for the album cover. I got
you. Yeah, it was. I was just being silly, and he took that picture. And the more they looked at it, go, that would make a great album cover.
Oh, okay, that's cool. And so now, when Bo does his producing magic, he then brings it to you guys again. And were you blown away by his 2020 versions of this 35-year-old record?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and so was he, because he, you know, he loves that record. And for him, you know, taking that trip down memory lane, you know, he'll tell you he looked at some things and that he did, and he's like, God, I was such a genius. And then he said he would run into five boneheaded things that he did. And I remember him calling me up one day, and he was like, who the fuck made this record? You know, because he had just found some really stupid things that he did that he had a tough time getting around digitally. Uh-huh. And, you know, of course he figured it out, but it was just funny to hear him kind of switch gears. Like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done. Why would I ever do that? And then listening to like the intro to Cry Baby, and he was like, I'm a genius.
Now, did he redo every track?
Every track is remixed from the 24 track masters.
Okay. And then is there other stuff in this as well?
Yeah. So there were demos, and as with the Fuse package, we wanted to put the demos in there as well. However, a couple of demos were really tough to track down. And one of them was Bang Bang, which was an actual, it was actually Kip Winger's first real songwriting credit.
Wow, that's
and
cool.
And so there wasn't a demo of that, but I had, Brian had given me a cassette. He gave me a stack of cassettes that had some Kix demos on it. And I found one little gem that had Kid Winger written on it, K-I-D. Yeah. And then it was crossed out and there was about four rough mixes of Layin' Rubber on it. And I was like, ah, that could have been the gold I was looking for. Huh. So, and Steve had told me, of course, that they never demoed that. They just did it in the studio. The other one I couldn't find was some Scarlet Fever. Mm-hmm. So that's, unfortunately, that demo is not included on the package. And then Walking Away was another one that just didn't exist anywhere. So I have a bunch of Rubbermaid totes that contain two track mixes that Kix made in their own studio way back in the day and some multi-track tapes. Mm-hmm. And so I had gone through all the two tracks and I actually still had the, Ronnie was going to throw this stuff out that he discovered in his barn about 15 years ago. And he was like, "Hey, you want all these old tapes?" And I was like, "Sure, I'll take them all." You know, thinking at some point we're going to be able to use right. these, you know? And, so he had given me a Fostex two track that was made in 1982 that Kix had purchased at the time and it still works. And so that's how I was able to get most of the demos. And I digitized them myself and sort of remastered them and made them nice and loud and EQ'd them a little bit. Some of the stuff was a little bass heavy, but, so the demo disc is very interesting because like, for instance, Cry Baby, the original title was Ball Baby. And when
ball,
you listen to that,
here's B-A-L-L?
No, B-A-W-L, like somebody crying.
A ball.
And,
oh,
yeah.
Ball.
And so that was actually Bo's suggestion to change it to Cry Baby.
Yeah, well, and, Ball Baby, B-A-L-L, sounds very weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And that's why Bo suggested to change it to Cry Baby, which, of course, caused the blow up that Steve could tell you more about at the end of the record. Which made Bo not do Blow My Fuse.
You blew up over the title of a track, and that's why Bo didn't come back, Steve?
Well,
yeah, it was goofy. I mean, first of all, I just wanted to say how great a time we had making that record with Bo. And everybody just laughed and got along and loved each other and was having the time of our lives and knew we were making a great record. And near the very end of the record, I believe it was a record company that came and said, "We don't want to call this Ball Baby because it implies, you know, balling and fucking, basically." Right. And that's the way they interpret it. And so both suggested calling it Cry Baby. And the stickler was, Bo wanted a writing credit for it. And Donnie Purnell blew up. He said, "No fucking way." And then heads, you know, everything just turned into that. And the recording was no fun anymore. And It ruined the whole thing, and it ruined Bo's chances of doing the next album, which I hated because I loved working with him.
Right. So, and didn't also, not to bring up sore details, but didn't you also have like a blow up with Purnell, and that's why you guys never spoke again?
I actually left the band after Midnight Dynamite came out because I just couldn't stand the way he was just controlling everything and everybody and every facet of everything that we did. And I just got fed up one day, and I just walked out of our rehearsal hall and I said, "I'm done with this, fuck this." And then the other guys go, "Yeah, fuck this," and they all follow me. And for about 4 or 5 days I really felt that I was going to leave the band, and then Donnie and I ironed some things out and got back together and you know, went on to make Blow My Fuse. But he was not an easy guy to work with. He was really controlling, and when he made a stance, he stuck with it like a tick. So when him and Bo had the little falling out, there was no repairing that relationship.
Fucking bass players, am I right?
Yeah. A genius of a songwriter, but
yeah, because he wrote most of those first records, right?
Yeah, he did. Well, it was hard to get a song in edgewise. I mean, I tried to write, but it wasn't acceptable. So, wasn't for lack of trying.
Yeah, and nowadays, it shows that you know you had with the last album did so well. Obviously, you guys know what you're doing at this point, so it wasn't like. He was preventing bad things from happening. You guys know,
right? I always felt that last record, the Rock Your Face Off album, was the most liberating experience after Kix, because, you know, we were under his thumb for so long and not able to write, not able to contribute, and being able to write songs and contribute as a band, just it just felt great. And that's what made us so proud of it.
Can I ask a stupid question? Is that, you know, because they never understand so much the dynamics of a band, right? But did he have at the time the veto ability to say, no, I don't want that song on the record? You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. He heard when we sent demos up to the record label and to management, I had about 5 songs that I'd written, whether they were good, great, or sucked or not. He just excluded all of them.
Oh,
and
wow.
And didn't nobody even heard him. So when I caught wind of that, I sent him up and he wanted to fire me over that.
Wow. That's crazy. Crazy story.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
So now to go to James. Always, James does this when he has a question. He's like,
"Well, I don't like to step on toes, man. I'm an only child. I got told to shut up a lot because I wasn't wanted. Whatever. I didn't want to."
I know how they felt.
I just want to say this out of tribute to you guys. I'm putting out another album, I think, in 2021, a comedy album. I'm gonna name one of my tracks "Ball Baby." Out of respect.
Right on.
But change it to "Fucking a Child." That way, it's, you know, like a. It's like an homage, so to speak, you know, a little bit different. So now in 2021 right now, which is kind of a weird thing, is I saw you have a bunch of dates lined up, and I'm assuming it's going to be a very Midnight Dynamite heavy. But the question is, it may not even happen. Who the fuck knows? But as of right now, that's the plan, correct?
We don't have a plan. We're just waiting for this damn pandemic to get the fuck out of the way and let us get back to life and
at
work.
Kickfan.com, I would beg to differ. There's a bunch of dates listed. So
I know there's a bunch of dates listed, but are they going to happen? You know,
right.
Everything's just been rescheduled, pushed up. So, and they're predicting that this, you know, if there is a vaccine, it won't be readily available till April or May of next year. So, and there's still going to be mask and social distancing for a while. So I don't think we're out of this yet. But
yeah, I think you're right there, Steve.
So it's hard to get a game plan together when you don't even know if you're going to be playing.
You know what? This just came to me right now. Another moment. I don't know, made me think about it. But at I think the last time I hosted M3, and you guys were doing the Friday, and you were singing "Cold Shower," it started to fucking rain for a few minutes just during that song. It was like the heavens wanted to comply with you. There was a crazy moment.
I did that.
That's the Kix black cloud, as we call it.
It was like perfect timing. It was a great moment. I gotta say, look, obviously I'm just such a big fan for years, you know, even really into the Funny Money records as well. As you know, we talked about off air that I brought you on my old radio show back then and saw you guys more times than I can even count at this point. So I'm really thrilled to see that. It's funny to, as I said at the top of the show, so much is going on with Kix. You had a documentary, you had a new album after 19 years, you're doing this reissue, you're going back on a tour. Is there a plan now, as that record came out a couple years ago, to do yet another Kix record, a new one?
Yeah, at some point, for sure. I mean, we all feel that way. It's just, you know, when is the right time? When is it something that we're going to need to do as artists and you know, right time for the fans, you know, I don't know, it's hard to say. I know everybody is for it and everybody wants to do it, but we have to slice out some time. I think when we did Rock Your Face Off, we had a summer where we actually weren't very busy for some reason.
Well, it's not like you're busy that right now, guys, let's be honest. You just said
but we can't get together. It's a little bit different. And, yeah. You know, we can't, and we want to, you know, we would want to do our next album with Taylor Rhodes as well. So, you know, and I've spoken to Taylor and he's on board, but you know, it's just not possible to get together. It's really tough, you know?
You also have to look at the financial aspect of it. I mean, you know, the amount of work and the amount of money that it costs to put a record out and what's the reward these days.
Right,
so exactly. There's a lot to weigh in.
I get it. Now, also, Steve, didn't you start out as the drummer and then became the singer, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. I was a drummer and, I joined the band as a half front man, half drummer. And we had another drummer who was the other half front man. And the band was like that. We were known as the Shoes back then.
Would you switch places during the sets?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, that's fucking cool as shit.
It was neat. And it was good. It was a good training ground to be a front man, because I was a turd on a mic when I first started. I didn't know what the hell to do, because I was really comfortable playing my drums and doing lead vocals. So just being thrown out there little by little was great, the training. And then when the other singer, he had a drug and drinking problem. That's when we brought Jimmy in, and I became the full time frontman.
Oh, that's cool. And out loud, you know, you're, as I said earlier, you're so known for your rants on stage and your move, the way you moved on stage, stuff like that. Who was your inspiration? Was it Mick Jagger? Like who was the guy that made you say, "Oh, I want to take that and make it my own." You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. I guess it was 1981. I saw the Stones tour, the Start Me Up tour. And at that point, I still didn't know what the hell I was doing or how to move around or how to look cool. And I saw Mick Jagger and I'm like, ah, that's how you do it. And then I saw Peter Wolf. So Peter Wolf just rants and is funny as hell. And I thought, if I could put those two styles together, I got some.
That's great. Yeah, that's a good way to analyze. That's pretty much what it is. That's pretty fantastic. All right. So, Shannon, what we're going to do now is we're going to do the first and then we're going to wrap this bitch up.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
All right, the name of the show, as you know, is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. And we ask our guests this every single show since the dawn of time. Your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you went to, but not a band we never heard of. Not your local friend's band, a band that we're going to actually know. Let's start with you, Mark. Your first show you went to.
Well, I'm a military kid, so I used to live in Europe when I was younger. And I went to high school there many years. And I actually saw Led Zeppelin in 1980 at the second to last concert they ever did.
Wait a minute. That was your first concert?
Wow.
Yeah. It was at the Olympia Hall in Munich. Yeah.
Touchdown, dog. Touchdown. Well,
that's fucking hard to beat that. Jesus Christ. That's a great one. How do you beat that?
Yeah, it was, well, that was the thing that what I just remember seeing, Jimmy Page. And, I remember, the next day I woke up and I was just so, you know, affected by it, you know, that I just decided that I was like, you know, I bet I could probably do that if I tried, you know? And so that's what really made me turn to music.
So you hadn't even tried playing guitar. You went to see Led Zeppelin and that inspired you.
Yeah. I didn't have a guitar. And it was one of those things where, you know, when you're a military kid in Europe, you can't just go to the store and buy things. You have to get whatever the PX has in stock. Mm-hmm. And so we would look through the Sears catalog and look at guitars and basses and think, hey man, wouldn't it be great if our parents could get that for Christmas? And of course, no parent wanted to buy you a skateboard or a guitar. So that was all bad news then. But yeah, that was,
that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. It was,
it's interesting to know, Steve, that no matter what answer you give for your first show, it is not going to beat what Mark said. So go.
I think Jimmy's is the best story of all time.
Jimmy's is the best.
Jimmy was at Woodstock.
Oh, wow. That's a fucking great story.
That's the best. That's the best of all time. My first show was in Morgantown, West Virginia. I saw the Doobie Brothers.
Oh, yeah. I was just watching a little bit of a documentary on the Doobie Brothers the other day because they're so they were so great.
They were great.
It's funny because there was, not to go off topic, but there was it's a sitcom in the 70s and early 80s thing called What's Happening, right?
And of course, rerun.
And there's a famous episode where the Doobie Brothers are in it, right? And there's the famous line, "Which Doobie you be?" which is also used in a hip hop record that was the title of the record. But I even remember as a kid thinking it was weird why these very urban kids would be into the Doobie Brothers. It didn't make sense to me. Like, how did that happen? And it turns out the company that was producing What's Happening also had a record label and they were trying to push the new Doobie Brothers record. So they forced that storyline in so that the Doobie Brothers were on What's Happening. And that's the story. The crazy story. All right. Sorry. I went totally off topic this. All right. So next, Mark, we'll start with you with the first drug you ever did.
Well, as I said, I lived in Europe as a kid and we didn't have weed over there. So you could only really get hash and we used to buy it from the GIs on base. And so it would come in little Marlboro pack sized bricks. And it had if it came from Morocco, it was blonde. If it came from Afghanistan, it was brown. And if it came from Turkey, it was another color. And so So we smoked hash a lot.
You're talking about the hash and not the people.
The hash.
Okay,
right.
I'm gonna make sure.
Right. Yeah. So you could tell where the hash came from. And that was my first experience with it. And it was a good experience until I got older and started getting paranoid, not being able to handle it anymore.
James, it looks like James has a hash experience.
No, I don't, but I'm just saying right now, my dude, I mean, we still have one more question for you to answer. Right now, you're going hard in the paint. You're like Shaq.
If your first time having sex isn't a threesome with penthouse pets, I'm going to be really excited.
No.
Stop this. You're just going hard in the paint.
All right, Steve, your first drug experience?
At the Doobie Brothers concert, I smoked a joint for the first time.
Oh, that's great. I didn't ask you this, by the way. Doobie Brothers, you went like because you were a fan, or did someone drag you? Like,
no, I was a huge fan. I love the Doobie Brothers.
That's a great career. And so someone there handed you a joint.
Yeah, it was just passed down the aisles, and I felt, you know, I felt peer pressure, and I thought, oh, what the fuck? So I got high as fuck.
You know, it's funny. We've had over the years, I've said this a few times, many people have had their two of the three experiences on the same night. Like, yeah, maybe they had sex and a drug or a concert and drug. Never once, which will be the best day ever, if someone's all three were the same night. That would be the best thing ever, but hasn't happened yet. All right, Mark, we're going to go with you now with your first sexual experience.
What do you want? Age or her name?
I'd like her address and some photos. No, what I mean by that is, like, how old were you? Were you dating for a while? Was it like a fumbling mess? Like, what happened?
I was living in Germany again. Germany.
I was on a base, so I was 9.
I was 13, almost 14.
That's fucking very young. Okay.
And, yeah, I was very young, and there were some surprising things about the female anatomy that I hadn't figured out from magazines.
That they didn't also have penises?
No, just the location of the entry point was a lot lower than I thought it was in the magazines. So okay. I struggled with that a little bit, but I, you know, as any young male would, I got past it.
Does that mean she said, "Excuse me, dude, but you're fucking my thigh"? Like, how did it actually, did she correct?
Well, I didn't let her know that I didn't know what I was doing. Of course not, you know, but, okay. But it was in an apartment that, she was babysitting for, one of my dad's, cohorts in the military. My dad was the executive officer and he was the junior captain. And she was babysitting for them. And it was like, "Hey, come on over." And I was like, "Hey, all right." You know? So
it wasn't, it was a one-off with a girl you just met.
No, we were in school together.
Oh, okay.
And, we sat next to each other in science class. So during the films, in science class, things would get a little, you know,
hot and heavy.
I knew it was going to happen. It was inevitable at that point. So
maybe you should have been sitting next to her in anatomy class and it wouldn't have happened that you didn't know where the vagina was.
Well, I might have had a little bit better of a roadmap there. I'm not sure, but
all right. And you, Steve?
I got a blowjob after I got high at the Doobie Brother concert.
No way! Come on,
is that true?
No.
Oh, fuck. I was so excited.
Goddamn, I'm a sucker. I'm a
rude. So if he was holding,
but that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
I'll let you have that story. Why not?
Thank you.
We'll say that was your story. That's a great one. So now, Midnight Dynamite Relit is out. By the time this is released, it is out. And the bonus tracks are on there. The demo tracks are on there. And then if you go to kicksband.com, you can see the proposed dates for 2021 in theory. Let's hope they happen. I saw you coming to New York in February. I fucking really hope you do. I think I still have your cell phone number, Steve. I'm going to try and get tickets from you.
Not a problem.
Yeah, but James, any closing questions before we wrap this up to the boys?
This was fun, man. You guys are the best. I will say, Mark, I mean, that's still a good story about the first time with sex, but when Ralph was like, "What's her name?" I was like, "Oh, here it comes. Oh, Julia Roberts." I just figured you can throw some real wild card out there, man.
Yeah, we went. She was a military brat also. It was Angelina Jolie. We didn't really know each other.
Right. Right. She was a nobody then.
Yeah, she didn't know. And she still calls me once in a while when her and anyway, anything else you guys want to plug besides kicksband.com and the reissue?
Not really.
Not really. That's what we got going on now. I mean, it's, you know, we ask our fans just to pay real close attention to the website and look at the touring schedule and see what, you know, if we're coming to your city and then it drops off the map, it's usually going to be rescheduled later. I think we've only lost maybe 2 gigs. Everything has been actually rescheduled.
Oh, that's good.
I think we've only lost like 2 gigs. And as far as we know, the Monsters of Rock thing is still happening in the,
yeah, I see that's listed. I was a part of that for, I think, one of the first few years, but then the concert cruise that I host called Shiprock, they kind of had like a little negativity towards each other. And I kind of had to make a choice at one point. Am I going in direction A, direction B? And I went with B, to Shiprock.
Yeah. Well, Monsters of Rock is going to be on shore this year in the Dominican Republic. So, because nobody wants to get on a cruise ship.
No, fuck that. In fact, I haven't responded. They talked about, you know, they're putting dates up, or they have a date up already, but there's no fucking way. If everyone's got the vaccine by then.
Right.
Let me ask this question before we wrap around. Let's assume there's a vaccine tomorrow. And are you taking it? Shannon, you taking it?
Not yet. No.
Mark, taking a vaccine?
Well, I was actually in the Moderna vaccine trial.
Wow. So
I volunteered for that.
Holy shit.
And
you're just fucking knocking it out of the park, aren't you? I was actually patient zero. It's funny you should actually ask me that.
Well, it's, you know, I, you know, my dad was in some cancer trials. My father had Agent Orange, cancer related Agent Orange, and passed about a year ago. And he had chosen to take part in some trials for some cancer medicines. And, you know, his reasons were, if I could save one of my men, then it's worth doing. And so when the Moderna thing came up, I signed up and I got some shit from people about it. You know, it's a government conspiracy. It's just all just fucking stupid.
Well, now you're microchipped.
Yeah, which is fine. I don't care. They can, you know.
Yeah, we all already carry these. We don't need
microchipped. We're all microchipped. So, but it was, you know, if not me, then who is how I think
it's awesome, man. You come off like quite the badass, Mark Shanker.
Mark, are you the greatest human of all time? Over Muhammad Ali. I mean, this is insanity.
I'm glad we were able to get you away from the orphanage where you do your volunteer work to come do this.
Oh my God.
Right. Where I'm building
Helps for humanity. Yeah.
Right. And building latrines in the Congo for, you know.
And also, is there a law that all people with the last name Shanker have to play guitar? Is that something written in the stars or something?
You know, it's funny. I have gotten Michael Shanker's emails at times by mistake.
That's funny.
There was a period of time where I was mshanker@verizon.net. And this is in the much early days, like 10, 15 years ago. And he was M whatever his middle initial is, Shanker@verizon.net. So I got a lot of his emails and I would just forward them to him and say, hey, you know, here.
That's fine. I get a lot. I get, someone has Ralph. I have Ralph.Sutton and someone else has Ralph Sutton. And I get his emails once in a while and I always forward to whoever that Ralph Sutton is that got the email faster than I did. James, you want to plug anything as we wrap up?
Yo, man. The James Madden on Instagram. If this comes out in November, I'll be at Soul Joel's Comedy Lounge emceeing, because there's like 3 places to play in the country right now. So go to Roy's for PA. Also, check out my podcast, The Commissioner of Comedy. It's about the comedy journey. Look, man, it's about passion. If you like to hear someone being passionate about what they do, if you have passion for anything, I guarantee you, you listen to these podcasts, you will be fired up. You will run through walls. You will do push-ups. You won't be quite as dope as Mark, because he is clearly the greatest human being of all time, but you'll feel like it. I promise you, Commissioner Comedy, there's all kinds of cool stories about me bombing live on Opie and Anthony, about me doing a benefit for a dead teacher and getting you upped by his ex in the front row. These are stories you got to check out. Commissioner Comedy, boom, boom, baby, boom, boom.
Now, I always love that Shannon's got to follow that. Oh, Shannon, your podcast.
I hate it. We need to switch the order next time.
I'll do it for you.
Okay. First, I want to say, Steve, you're a pretty great guy too. I feel bad that everyone keeps saying that Mark is the greatest guy of all time. So you're also great.
Thank you.
You heard that? Pretty great. I can attest to that.
Steve, Shanna thinks you ain't so bad. That's something.
I like that. Hey, I would do that vaccine in a heartbeat. I would do it tomorrow.
Yeah, I would too. I definitely would.
Because this year we've played a wedding reception, we played a cornfield, a guy's house, and a drive-in. So I want to get the hell away from that and get back to normal.
Yes. You know, it's going to be weird, by the way, before you do your plug, Shannon, there's going to be that interim time when, let's say, 30% of the public have done the vaccine, 70% haven't, they probably have some sort of card or identification that says, I got vaccinated, I can go in, and it's going to be a fucking tale of two cities for a while where it's going to be the haves and the have-nots. It's going to be really weird. Go ahead, Shannon, plug. I'm sorry.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts.
And I'd like to ask this to both of you guys. Do you believe in ghosts?
Sure, I do.
You both did. All right, look at that. Mark gave a far more affirmative answer. Steve was like, yeah, why not? Sure. Mark's like, oh, no. Yes, there are. Definitely.
No, I've had a couple of experiences that make me believed.
You should go on Shannon's show. Shannon's show is about dating, fighting, and ghosts. So we already know you got at least the dating part covered. So we know would be.
I got fighting covered. I'm a blue belt in jiu-jitsu, so I can talk about fighting.
Oh, shit.
Hits keep coming. I mean,
so we can do ghosts. We can do fighting. We can do dating.
All right, there you go. That's
perfect.
I know the lawn.
He got his jiu-jitsu fighting training when he was working with the Aboriginal cancer treatments of
right.
All right, so and just to wrap this up, guys, as you know, I'm just such a fucking huge fan of you guys. The way I would describe Kix, if anyone ever asked me, is they're the band that the other bands want to be. You guys were always just gave it 110% at every show. I fucking loved you guys till you started to now. You've always been super nice and just super cool dudes. Thank you so much for coming on the SDR show, and everyone go to kixband.com. Get the Midnight Dynamite. We're going to do Midnight Dynamite off the record because such a great song. And
earplugs.
Earplugs.
Oh. Your plugs.
Oh, my plugs. Oh, just follow me. No, these are earplugs. Just follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. That's all I care about. And guys, really, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Follow us on Instagram too. Mark Shanker, Stephen F. Whiteman 18, I think is his.
Wow, you're really early into the Instagram, Steve.
It's at Kixband on Instagram as well.
Okay, cool. By the way, I should have not let you say that, because when I asked, is there anything else you want to plug, you said no, and then you changed your mind.
I forgot about plugging Instagram. I always forget about that, or plugging all the band's social medias. I always forget about that. So,
all right, well, thank you so much, guys, and we'll see you next week on the SDR show.
Right on. Thank you for having us.
Listening to the SDR show.